Hello and welcome back to Pod on the Tyne. My name's Taylor Payne and I'm joined by George Corgan and Chris Woff on what is, let's be honest, a pretty monumental day in the history of Newcastle United. George Corgan, how are we feeling?
Well, I'm going to tell you what happened to me today, very briefly. I was driving down the A1. The lorry in front of me clipped a single magpie that was flying across the motorway.
Oh, Jesus.
It then flew beneath my car and I squashed it dead.
As far as omens go, it's not a great one, is it? Let's be honest.
Just putting that out there, people won't believe it, but I swear on the lives of everyone who was dear to me, that is an accurate story. I'm feeling a bit numb, actually. It's a strange one. It feels, though, sort of coming hard on the heels of the sort of Kevin Keegan news, that eras are ending all around us.
Yes.
In very frequent fashion. So definitely an end of an era again at Newcastle. And yeah, right that we should reflect on what has been an extraordinary spell for the club and then look at a little bit of about what comes next. How about you, Taylor?
Feeling quite similar to that as well, and just sort of a bit reflective, especially with everything that's happened over the last couple of weeks. There's been a lot to process, hasn't there? I'm sure there's going to be lots more as well. Chris Woff's here as well. Chris, thank you for joining us. It's been one of them days, hasn't it? It's just all gone off.
It has. I mean, I am on the North Northumberland coast somewhere, supposedly on holiday, but obviously this broke even the emergency glass for me being on air, being on holiday and trying to join in. So I have been, yeah, trying to follow this from afar, trying to take calls here and there. But yeah, I am both shocked but not surprised at the same time. And I think we'll come on to that a bit later on. But in that, it doesn't surprise me that Eddie Howe has largely been the one who's made this decision and decided that this isn't working and he wants to walk away. But I am a bit shocked by the timing. I mean, I'm not going to try and rewrite history on our Extra Time episode. Was it last week, the week before? I can't remember. We were asked about whether I thought Howe would resign, and at that point I said I didn't think he would because we were already into pre-season. Obviously that has happened, and that shows my judgment as a journalist more than anything else. But yeah, as George said, a monumental day. It did feel like a bombshell that has been dropped, and I know there's been a lot of people speculating that is it linked to losing 4-1 to Bristol City, but I think that was just bad timing, and it's quite a sad way really for all of this to end at a 4-1 friendly defeat away at Bristol City.
It certainly is. Well, let's dispense with the usual headlines. There's really only one story in town today. Eddie Howe leaves Newcastle United after a few magical years in the job, with the occasional trough thrown in as well. Story broken by The Athletic's David Ornstein. No official statement is yet from the club, but what are the details as we understand them, George?
Well, no, you're right to say no official statement. I think they're waiting to get the next guy lined up and get that sorted. But Eddie Howe has left the club. The feeling from everybody connected to the club, from Eddie himself to the people around him and above him, is that simply that it's just time, that it's the right time, that he's exhausted effectively, I think, and that in another challenging summer, what's been incredibly challenging summer so far, he sort of doesn't have the right energy to carry on and effectively start again. I think that's important. I think it sums him up as a man that he's kind of reached that decision. As Chris said, I mean, you know, Chris and I over these last few years have had a really good relationship with him, and you know, use that relationship to try and find out what's going on at the club. Professional relationship. Again, I think it's fair to say that when the news about Bruno first broke three weeks or so ago. Eddie was left in a very difficult position, was at the point of considering his future again, you know, whether he was on a hiding to nothing, whether he would kind of not get a fair crack of the whip next season, but just whether there was enough solid ground for him to kind of go again. And he did go back to pre-season training. So, you know, this adds a little bit of context to what Chris said earlier. He kind of got back in amongst the players, and I think that gave him a lift. You know, he was back doing what he did best. But I think with everything that's gone on, with Newcastle missing out on a lot of players again, with them clearly going in a new direction, with all the stuff going on about Bruno and noises off, I just think he felt that the time was right for him to take a break, to have a rest. He deserves it. He needs it. for the club to be able to do what they need to do and move forward. I think in an ideal world, Eddie Howe is manager of Newcastle United forever and ever, and he's brilliant and wins loads of trophies. I mean, you know, that's the first thing. I think in you know, realistic ideal world, this decision would have happened at the end of last season, not now, 3 weeks to go before the start of the new campaign. But this feels like the right decision for everybody at this point.
We had a message off Bren as well, and they've said, it appears Eddie and everyone at the club have known about this for 2 to 3 weeks, amazed that they managed to carry off the business as usual front while clearly working on a replacement. Did George or Chris have any inkling at all that something wasn't right? Chris, was there anything in the water?
Well, as George has sort of intimated, certainly with the Bruno news, and we knew there was a sort of general... unhappiness would be the wrong word, but maybe was everyone fully on the same page and bought into to the direction that the club was intending to go on after what has been a bruising summer? And I thought it was interesting, and I said this to George on Saturday after the Gateshead game, when Howard mentioned the players who Newcastle had lost and how difficult a summer it was again. It just feels like for the reset, or whatever you want to call it, that Newcastle are doing this summer, it required someone who was fully energised and fully bought into what was going to happen moving forward. And maybe just certainly once the Bruno news came, that wasn't something that Howe expected. He had expected Tenali to leave. He had expected Gordon to leave. But then the thought of losing Bruno, the fact that they'd missed out on Johan Manzambi and Victor Munoz, two of their top targets, Manzambi being the top one overall, and the four players have signed, although he really likes all of them, none of them probably are going to start that first game of the season, or you can question whether they are ready to do that. And so with the 11 being weakened, with... how is it? George used the term fair crack of the whip, and I think that's part of it. And I said this at the back end of last year, and it was when we did the review of the season podcast. What was I most concerned about? It was the first few games of the season, and if Newcastle got a difficult fixture list and things didn't go well, and suddenly the negativity ramped up on Eddie Howe again, and maybe he felt that as well. And we know previously, as George has said on previous podcasts, that at Bournemouth he felt he'd stayed a year too long, and he had doubts around the Brentford game and towards the back end of last season. I think he had doubts early in the summer, but there was something within him that told him he wanted to continue. And clearly, over the course of the last 2 or 3 weeks, whether it was Bruno the final straw, whether it was just a cumulative effect of different things, or whether he just felt that on the training ground it wasn't happening in the way that it had previously for him, the players maybe weren't taking on the messages on board in quite the same way, or he wasn't feeling the same, he's made this decision now. It's definitely not ideal timing. It's better than... in 2 or 3 weeks' time, but it would have, I think, in hindsight, it probably would have been better if everyone had gone their separate ways at the back end of last season. But I think it shows the measure of Eddie Howe to a certain degree, that despite him having told the club 2 or 3 weeks ago, he's continued to work through this as they hopefully bring in this replacement who's there. He hasn't just gone, I have to just go immediately. He has tried to work through it in the best way he can.
I think that's a key thing. I think it's what is very clear, is very obvious, it's becoming increasingly obvious as we go on, is that this is going to be, this is not a reset. This is a new team. This is the start of something different. You know, obviously everybody connected to Newcastle wants it to be a positive new direction and a positive new start. But with Eddie Howe remaining in place, it was difficult going to, you know, to make the argument that this was a completely fresh start. Now, if you have a new manager coming in with a new team, I think you automatically get more patience. You get people saying, okay, this is fine. I think, as Chris has said, the worst thing that could have happened was that Newcastle have a difficult start with a new team, with a new squad, and then Eddie Howe leaves 7-8 games into the season and it's starting again. I think this does allow the club to say this is a proper new start, not in ideal circumstances, as Chris has said, but that this is the start of something new. And I think it is a measure of Eddie Howe that he has recognised this. He's always been self-analytical. He's always looked at his own position, looked at whether he's able to give what he needs to give and whether it's right for him to stay on. And I think he's taken a decision, which ultimately, however sad it is the right decision for everybody.
And whatever the legal specifics of that final announcement, George, whenever that does actually arrive, this is, for all intents and purposes, this is a resignation by Eddie Howe.
Well, I think it's that sense of mutual. I think it'll be presented as a sort of mutual thing. I don't know that for definite. But having spoken to people, you know, around the club today, and you know, and with Eddie Howe previously, I think there's a lot of respect there and a lot of admiration. Everybody knows what Eddie Howe's done, but again, to sort of repeat that point, I think for them to go into this summer and this new season with the team looking very different, they needed him to be absolutely all in. And if we go back to his first day in charge, that was the phrase he used: "I'm an all-in manager. You get absolutely all of me." And I think if there's any sense that his heart wasn't quite in it, or you know, not quite the same way, that he just couldn't give any more. Let's not forget, he had pneumonia at the back end of the season when Newcastle get back into the Champions League and won a trophy. I mean, he tired himself to the point of, to illness, fighting to do the best for the club. Then it made sense for this to happen. So mutual agreements cover up a lot of things sometimes, but I think with this one, it's genuinely the case. I think there's just a recognition from all parties that the time is right to do something else.
Chris, do we think the transfer business, or maybe the lack thereof, was the final straw or one of the big straws that brought the camels back here?
Well, it's up for Howe to reveal whether that's the case, but it's certainly, I think there were contributing factors. And I think if the doubts that he harboured, and that he'd basically decided, he weighed up the positives and negatives at multiple points seemingly in the first 6-7 months of this year, and came out on the "no, I want to continue." I think it just became the straw breaking the camel's back, just too much. The scales eventually tipped the other way when there's all this sort of, particularly the Bruno saga, because I think the problem you've got with Bruno is that even if Bruno stays, and I know that everyone will immediately jump to the conclusion this means he's going, I don't know for certain what is going to happen there, and I don't think they know for certain what's going to happen there with at Newcastle, although it does feel like it probably is, that momentum is gathering that he would potentially go. But even if he stays, you have a player whose focus has shifted that he wants to go, and that's not to question Bruno's professionalism. He may come back and it may be that he is fully engaged again, but you know that that slipped, you know that that mask has slipped to a certain degree, and he has questions about the direction that club is moving in. He wants to go elsewhere. And so I think it's all of these things. But Manzambi, I think, was a big one, because that came immediately off the back of the Bruno news breaking. And then they'd missed out on Munoz, who Howe really liked, really wanted him to come in, felt he could have made an immediate impact into the team, could have scored goals, could have provided assists.
Yeah.
That doesn't happen, right? But Manzambi's our top target. Look what he's done at the World Cup. He can add goals in midfield. He can add legs. It's, again, not probably doesn't quite meet the statement signing level, but certainly would have brought a lot of excitement and would have immediately gone that first team. When that doesn't happen as well, I think it's suddenly, I just don't know how much I can actually wring out of these players now. Got some young, hungry players coming in, but it's almost as if Newcastle are now at the two extremes. They've got the very young and hungry players. They've also got the ageing members of their squad. Where's that happy medium in between? And if Bruno goes, there's very, very few of those characters now. And seemingly just the fire possibly wasn't there anymore.
I think the first response from a lot of fans on hearing this news, George, has been, does this mean that Bruno Guimarães is away? I know a lot of people I've spoke to today are presuming that that's what's going to happen. And Eddie Howe made some interesting sort of forces at play comments as well after that Bristol City game. Interesting to wonder how this is going to impact that.
Yeah, I mean, it's a perfectly fair, it's a fair question. I mean, I thought Howe's comments were totally fair enough. I mean, basically, he was saying he doesn't know what's going to happen, but like nobody does. I mean, forces at play include Arsenal, who haven't made bids. So, you know, certainly hadn't, as you know, when Eddie was talking after the Bristol City game. So Newcastle are, it's not that they're powerless, but it's like, what can they do at this moment in time? And it is also, from the start of it, it's felt like a concerted campaign to me. It's felt like this is happening in tandem. We have been triggered, of course, by what happened this time last summer. And again, from the conversations I've had today, there is a recognition that this doesn't make it any easier to keep Bruno.
Yeah.
That if Bruno was looking for an excuse, and I'm not saying he is, but if he was looking as an excuse to say, okay, I do need to leave, this would be it, that the guy that he's worked with at Newcastle, and again, people I've spoken to over the past 24 hours, even before this news came out, there was a feeling among some of them that Bruno ends up going. We've seen this movie before. Like, we know how this movie ends. The official line from the club is unchanged. It's that they have a valuation of Bruno. It's very high. They don't want him to go. He's not for sale. Doesn't mean he won't be sold. And that they've had no contact from Arsenal. That's been the message all this week. It's consistent. But to me, it feels like it's going to be harder to keep him now. And, you know, we have to see how things play out. Again, Arsenal have to make a bid. The bid has to be acceptable. But this does feel like it makes the likelihood of him leaving increase. That's how I feel about it.
On the previous question, which you asked me, which I didn't really answer, and I'm going to use the excuse of my Wi-Fi isn't great, so you keep cutting it out. But what were the other straws was one of the things that you said. And I think that the same issue that a lot of fans have at the moment is maybe something that Eddie Howe has, and that feels like the disconnect between what is happening and what is being said, the direction that Newcastle are going in is. And I think for Howe, the more and more Newcastle have gone down this direction of either they haven't signed the first choice players he necessarily wants, or Bruno Guimarães potentially goes, it's like, what are the expectations going into next season? Realistically, Newcastle need to be getting back into Europe if they're going to get back on track, A, financially, to try and make sure they meet UEFA commitments, but B, for this Vision 2030 and for getting back towards them wanting to compete consistently to challenge for silverware eventually by next decade. It seems like Newcastle are going to be taking one or two steps back to then hopefully take steps forward. Has that been clearly communicated enough publicly? I would argue not. I've said that before on the podcast, and I think that it does need to be better communicated. And I think that from Howe's position, there was probably that as well, because it felt like his success on the field up until this stage, that realistically, if Newcastle didn't suddenly get back to being maybe in the Champions League, but certainly in a European position next season, having finished 12th last year, then that would be very much a failure, quote-unquote, relative to the achievement he's had on the field. But Newcastle had been overperforming until last season, when they then did significantly underperform, albeit in challenging circumstances to a certain extent. And so I think there's that. There's the narrative around it, and then maybe the disconnect there. And when we talk about that challenging start that may have been to the new season, it's also like, what are the expectations of supporters? And I think they're so varied, because I don't think people really fully know exactly what is going on. Those at the top of the club talk about the exciting plan that they have and where Newcastle are going to move over the course of the next few years. But it's hard to get people to buy into that right now when they don't have all of that information, and it feels like it's negativity heaped upon negativity. And how going, certainly we're going to use that term, which I'm going to get complaints about optics-wise, how going right now at this moment doesn't help with those optics, because it feels like, even if it isn't directly connected, and only he can answer that, even if it isn't directly connected to what has been happening this summer and what's happening off the field, then, yeah, it does. People are going to automatically make that assumption.
There's been absolutely zero respite for Howe too. I think we have to sort of accept that. So you look back a year ago, it's one of the most toxic, most difficult summers in the club's recent history, but there's been a few of those. It's then followed by the longest season in the club's recent history. So in terms of, you know, the amount of games, very wearing, it got grumpy for the first time. And then it's more of the same this summer. It's like, it's real echoes of last summer again. And whether that's fair or not, I don't know, but that's certainly how it feels. It's the same thing. Realistically, the question that Eddie Howe had to ask himself was, what more can I do? What more can I do? And Chris talked about the new music around it again. It's like, if he is effectively having to start all over again, but there is this sort of huge expectation on him externally, or, you know, like, you know, what more can he do? And I think that's the question that he's asked himself repeatedly. What more can I do? Is there anything else I can give? And ultimately, the answer to that is no.
I mean, the clues were there, weren't they? But this has still come as a bit of a shock. And we talked about how we were feeling at the top. But what is our actual first reaction to saying goodbye to Eddie Howe, and you would presume Jason Tindall now as well. I mean, I'll be honest with you, I'm feeling a mix of sort of sadness, but also grateful as well at the same time. I feel like, you know, I'm sad that Eddie couldn't get himself to a position where he could turn this round, and that he was able to continue as our manager and bring back those amazing times that we've had over the last few years, but also grateful for the fact that we actually got to see him take charge at Newcastle. And I mean, he's given me the five best years of my Newcastle United supporting life. Even when it wasn't great, it was still great fun. You know, even when things were tough, we were still going to places like Borussia Dortmund and we were still watching Champions League football and stuff like that. And it gave me, you know, one of the best days of my life, which I will never, ever forget. I'm eternally grateful to him and all of his staff for that. I think he leaves with nothing but happy memories as far as I'm concerned. And you know, I'm sad to see him go, and I wish him all the best for whatever he does in the future. He'll always be an absolute hero to me for what he did coming into this job when he came in, when we were struggling, you know. I mean, I don't know how you feel, but that, to me, it's nothing but sort of pride mixed with sadness.
Yeah, I mean, and I would hope that even the people who had kind of come to the conclusion that he was no longer the right man for Newcastle would share those sentiments, because Newcastle United is now unrecognisable from the team, the club that he walks into. And his list of achievements is absolutely astonishing. It's remarkable. It stands up to anybody else in Newcastle's history. The way I wrote about it when the news kind of first came out, you know, for The Athletic, was that if Kevin Keegan, obviously we've just lost Kevin Keegan, but if he was the man that persuaded Newcastle United to dream, Eddie Howe was the man who made those dreams come true. Like, my entire life I've wanted to know what it's like to win something. It's the one thing that was missing. It's never seen it. In domestic terms, not happened for 70 years, and he delivered that. He delivered that to us. And so, like, that cannot be downplayed. And, you know, the other things, going back to his first achievement, saving the club from relegation, astonishing. He doesn't get enough credit for that. We've said this before. Like, Newcastle had not won a single game when he's appointed that season in November. It took them until the end of January to win their second game. They stayed up. They signed phenomenal players. Like, his recruitment has suddenly been like a stick to be him with, but the recruitment under his watch has, by and large, when it's happened, has by and large been extraordinary. The players that we're talking about, getting to see Bruno Guimaraes for so long, Trippier, Dan Burn, like his story, Tonali, Isak, all of those great players. Of course, there's a tinge of sadness or sourness now attached to some of those players, but like, brilliant players. The team that he turned Newcastle into, particularly in those early years, everybody fighting together, standing for something, like representing Newcastle in a way that we'd forgotten about as fans. Like, fuck the rest of the world. We're Newcastle United. We're going to do it. We're going to shithouse. We're going to do whatever it takes to win. Like, the hairs stand up on the back of my neck thinking about, you know, those early 18 months, whatever it was, when Newcastle was suddenly winning again. And it was like, this is absolutely unbelievable. And, you know, that's before we talk about the Champions League, the two Champions League and the trophy and PSG and like all those incredible nights. I mean, it is a remarkable legacy, and it's a beautiful legacy. And yeah, we should all be celebrating that, you know, by virtue of what happened at Wembley in 2025. He automatically becomes a legend. You know, the sign of that big war flags banner draped down in front of the Sandman Hotel, you know, for the lap. You know, so I hope everybody shares that. You know, it couldn't have happened without Keegan, but he has been an absolutely transformative figure in Newcastle's history. And whoever, you know, whatever happens next, it will be a big, big job to replicate what he's done. Yeah, we should always be grateful for what he's done. Incredible.
Chris, there's an awful lot of emotions to process with this, isn't there? It's just like one thing after another, but it's such an emotional thing that happened to the club at this time as well.
It is, and I echo everything that George has said. I can't really add more to that than how much he has transformed Newcastle and taken them on this journey. And as we've said so many times, the cliche has become that the team on the pitch jumped so far ahead of the club off it, and that's exactly what happened. And he was so influential within that, him and his coaching staff, you can't forget them as well, and the backroom team and those who are there. Jason Tindall is obviously right-hand man, who stepped in when Howe was ill as well, but has always been there alongside him. They are a team. That's how they operate. And so it's been wonderful, and for the Newcastle that I have reported on previously, obviously the takeover changed so much of that, but Howe changed a lot of that. It changed the sort of, it always felt like there was a sort of, it was a sparring match or negativity between the sort of club and the media and the manager and the media. But Howe changed a lot of that. And yes, we joke that his press conferences were dull, but he was also very good at getting his message across. He was very good at communicating to supporters for a long period of time. But there is also a part of me that, although I'm very sad that this day has come, because as George said, you want him to continue, and then that means that Newcastle are doing well, I am relieved to a certain degree that it hasn't gone into the season for the pessimist within me.
Yeah.
Just worried about where this could have gone. It could have turned toxic. You hear reports from Bristol City that there were even some in the away end who were sort of chanting negatively towards him, which is entirely their right. They've gone there. Newcastle have lost 4-1. But if it had really turned bitter, if, say, that the hierarchy had decided they wanted to keep him on and Howe hadn't walked, and then there's negativity within St. James's Park. It never really fully got to that point inside St. James's. It teetered a couple of times last year, but it never really got there. I'm glad we've avoided that moment. I don't think wouldn't have wanted him to go through that. I wouldn't have wanted Newcastle fans to have gone through that, because a lot of people were starting to feel conflicted come the back end of last season. So in that sense, I think relief is there for me. It's difficult to see the wood for the trees going forward. Now, I've had a message on Blue Sky, slightly flippant one, but a message from Tom M, who says, "I need Chris and George to tell me on the podcast that it's all going to be okay." And I'm not going to lie to you and tell you that it's all going to be okay. I don't know what happens next. I'm not just going to come on here and say that it's all going to be all right. But at least a decision has been made. I when you have seen and spoken to Howe over the course of the last few months, previously, even if there was sometimes a negative tinge to the way that Howe spoke about certain things, you could feel the fire was burning, and I was questioning, and I had been questioning for a little while. George and I had a conversation just around the time of the Bruno one, and I remember saying to him, it doesn't feel the same. It doesn't feel exactly, he doesn't feel as, it almost felt like not a man who was, yeah, almost that he convinced himself that they had to keep going this regard, and clearly whatever has changed that opinion, and rather than try to go into it and not really feel it anymore, he has made that decision, and it's not great that it's just as Newcastle are about to fly out on Langer, but it's better now than him start the season and either walk out or be hounded out.
I think the word you used, Chris, was resigned, and so there have been some, you know, like when we're talking about all the incredible achievements, we have to also talk about, you know, the extraordinary circumstances he's been in, like right at the start, no executive team, no sporting director, he's effectively doing all that job alongside Amanda Staveley and Mehrdad Gudusi right at the start, they're signing players, they're doing everything, and then there's been huge upheaval around him, and then the better Newcastle got, the more difficult it became to keep that dressing room together, because they were good players. They were, you know, they were casting eyes elsewhere. Keeping everybody on board became a huge, huge challenge. And so there were moments when he really, really suffered. I mean, there was, you know, someone close to him after the end of the cup win season, the Champions League, people will never understand. You know, people will never understand how difficult that season was for Eddie. They ended up as legends and heroes, but my goodness, it was tough. And he would often talk about those things, but it would sort of end with that, you know, but I'll bring the team around, I'll bring the players around, I'll do it. Or like, this isn't great with what's going on around me, but, you know, I'll bring it round. And I think in the last sort of few weeks, you know, Chris, you used the word resigned. It felt a bit more resigned. And that's when it doesn't feel healthy. It doesn't feel right. And so, again, you know, not trying to rewrite history, but there has definitely been a tone of that.
We had an email from Chris Lane, and it says, "Edward John Frank Howe, you gave me the day I'd always dreamed of having but never thought I'd get. To be at Wembley with two sons old enough to share a pint with, it might just be the best day of my life. Thank you." And maybe this is the change event that will finally allow George to unlock his feelings about that day. He's talked about being unsounded, numb about it ever since. George, do you think this is going to allow you to enjoy that?
Well, I did. I definitely had feelings on the day. I mean, my feelings didn't need to be unlocked. I was in tears. And I was there with my brother, AJ, who's actually just arrived in the UK with his family for a visit, which is nice. But and sharing that with him was just, you know, like just a thing of beauty and something. It's a lovely message, Chris. And I totally share that. And, you know, like this becomes a much more existential thing. I think there has been this feeling of like what Newcastle become, you know, what Newcastle are now. Like we've scratched the great itch, like this magnificent obsession we've had since the Keegan days. It's like we've done it, we've got it. And so what happens next? And, you know, I know that I've talked about that a lot, but I think that has been tricky. It's definitely been tricky at a moment when Newcastle financially have been hemmed in. And I think, you know, to go back a year, Newcastle thought they were at the top table and it was quickly proven that they actually aren't there yet. And I think that's kind of come into play in what's happened. But yeah, the time will come when I'll watch the game back and I'll enjoy it. But I can't, you know, I still can't, you know, it's like it's changed my entire identity as a Newcastle fan. And that's down to Eddie Howe. I mean, what a thing to say. You were the man that finally did it. You know, like Eddie Howe at Newcastle United, at last. It's what a thing to have on your CV. What a thing to be able to tell your kids. And yeah, we were there and he brought that for us. In fact, we talked about exactly that subject in the documentary we made about Eddie Howe for our Extra Time feed last summer. So why don't we play a little bit of that now?
Van Dijk with a header. Joe Linton. Newcastle United have won a trophy for the first time since 1969. 56 years of hurt. End at Wembley Stadium. The Carabao Cup is won. The Geordie nation have silverware to celebrate.
Ultimately, that is his legacy, to be the man who ended the great obsession, all those years of yearning. My identity as a Newcastle fan, my entire life has been about Newcastle not winning. A lot of that identity is also about trying to win, striving to win. I'd given up on that halfway through the Mike Ashley era. I told myself, Newcastle aren't going to win anything in my lifetime. Life actually became a bit easier after that. I stopped feeling angry. I stopped feeling so disappointed every time Newcastle went out of the cups early, which happened for every cup, every year. You know, I'd sort of reconciled myself to that. And really, I have to be honest, I haven't got my head around the fact that Newcastle have won something. I haven't watched it back. I have to do it. I don't know. I think I've got something inside me is almost telling me not to do it. I don't know if it's like I just can't really believe it. But if I try and take a step back and go back to Wembley, and the moment, obviously they'd been there 2 years before, the weekend was an incredible occasion, the final itself was very familiar, but to be back there 2 years on, sensing from the start when You'll Never Walk Alone was drowned out, thinking, all right, okay, this is different this time, everyone's turned up, you know, Dan Burns' goal goes in, I'm melted. I was sitting next to you in the press box. I thought I'd be a bit hardened to it the second time around, but I melted, couldn't believe it. I've said this before, I still don't understand, I still can't compute that Newcastle were good that day, that Newcastle, you know, I heard people talking afterwards saying, oh, that could have been 4-0. It's like, what? I was living on my nerves all the way through. I was like breaking it up into 5-minute section. Oh, we've done okay. Oh, Liverpool will be angry now. To have given us that is to have given us everything. It's the thing that I've always dreamed of. And, you know, again, if I can sort of personalize it, to be with you, you know, to be with Ollie, for us to be able to call Taylor, have that chat for the podcast after that, but also to be there with my brother AJ and him to be sharing it. And again, like seared on my memory, the text he sent me in the 90 odd minute saying, everybody is crying around me and I think I'm going to pass out. And this guy, you know, he's a firefighter, tough man. He hadn't had an alcoholic drink, but that was the heightened emotion in the Newcastle bits of the stadium that day. He has given us everything. He should have a statue one day. I hope he does. I can't really sort of say any more than that. That is the crowning achievement, I think.
What we also saw in the immediate aftermath of that, certainly on the day of the parade and on the day on the town moor, was just how visibly moved he was by the reaction and what it actually meant to everyone that the flag draped down the entirety of the Sandman opposite St. James's, and then just seeing 200,000 people or more on the streets of Newcastle and then on the town moor. He was, and I know this for a fact, it isn't just something he said, he was very, very moved by that. He was shocked even by the reaction there, and he is so proud of being able to give something to all of the people who have shown that faith in him, but he has very much repaid that with that trophy and everything else.
When you come down to it, his greatest legacy is Newcastle United are not famous losers. Newcastle United are winners.
What happens next is definitely the question that's going to be on everybody's lips. We've already had a strong suggestion that the man taking Eddie Howe's place will be Matthijs Jijsler, and that's how we're pronouncing it, until we get a clear indication of the proper way from somebody who knows better. He's a young German coach from Al Ahly. There's a PIF connection there. There may be some fears that he's a bit of a yes man as well with that link. Chris, what do we think?
I get why that would be the obvious conclusion that would be reached. I don't know the full ins and outs yet of how this has come about. George and I are still sort of looking into that. But I mean, certainly his success with Al Ahly will have made those at PIF take notice, because it is with the Saudi Pro League team and they have won the Asian Champions League in back-to-back seasons. But he is also a very impressive coach in his own right in the short amount of time that he has been coaching. He did very, very well in Austria with RB Salzburg. He's been a bit of a rapid rise for him, but he was successful there. Part of the Red Bull system. Ross Wilson, Newcastle's sporting director, obviously previously has worked at Southampton, where there's been Hasenhüttl and the like, and I think that he has he likes part of the Red Bull system, but also the way Newcastle want to play, or I've talked about wanting to play moving forward, almost sort of building on the Howe legacy, or the way Howe has played with high pressing, front foot football, looking to win the ball high. Theoretically, although this squad this summer has been built with Eddie Howe in mind and the targets with Eddie Howe in mind, it shouldn't be too dramatic a shift towards what you would expect here moving forward. So that's always going to be labelled towards it, but I don't know entirely what that necessarily means, because Newcastle run day to day by Ross Wilson, the sporting director on the sporting side, and David Hopkinson, the CEO on the executive and business side, and we already get so many accusations from supporters that, you know, that they're not interested, PIF, they won't do it. So are they really going to take so much of an interest suddenly, or all of a sudden it's going to flip and that it's going to be that they are going to micromanage every single second of what goes on there? So I don't think that's necessarily true. I think you'd be allowed to get on with the footballing side of things, but I don't know, and we'll find out, but maybe moving forward he won't necessarily have the power over transfers which Eddie Howe did. That will be the big question, which we will find out. Is it going to be Jijsler who's going to have the final say? You would have thought he would certainly be involved in that conversation, but Howe was still, despite Ross Wilson doing and Hopkinson doing the negotiations this summer, it was still a list of targets which Howe had been involved in. It might not have been the ultimate exact players he wanted at the very top, but within the parameters of what Newcastle wanted to do and felt they could do, it was still Howe governing that, and he obviously last summer had a heck of a lot of power in that regard. So we shall see. It's an interesting move. It isn't someone who was really on my radar. I'm not going to pretend I know absolutely loads about him beyond what I've been finding out over the course of today speaking to people and reading up on him, and I don't think he was necessarily fully at the forefront of Newcastle's thinking in the sort of spring if they had been considering making a change there, but they have reached the conclusion that of those available or attainable at this very moment with Howe moving, when they had to move rapidly, he has obviously scored well in a variety of different ways as to what they're looking for, and it'll just be, he's been parachuted in at a very interesting time.
He made his name in the Red Bull group with Austrian side RB Salzburg and spent two seasons at Al Ahly in the Saudi Pro League, as we said before. George, I'm going to be honest with you. I don't know an awful lot about this lad, other than that he's younger than me, and that scares me slightly, and I'm not sure how I feel about it. And also, he does have a magnificent head of hair and seems to be quite a snazzy dresser as well. Apart from that, I don't know an awful lot about the chap.
No, and I can't say that I do. I'm not going to lie about it either. So, and which it, in its own right is kind of quite interesting because, you know, there has been some of the narrative around sort of Eddie Howe. I mean, right from the start, but also, you know, when things sort of soured a bit, it was like, well, you know, Eddie's been great for us. He's took us to our first trophy, but is he really the elite coach that this team, you know, team and club needs? And I don't think we would be saying that this guy at the moment is that candidate, not to say you can't develop into him and won't develop into him, and fingers crossed that happens at Newcastle. But you're not talking about one of the kind of huge great names on the global stage who is,
I mean, I'm jumping ahead slightly here in the run order, but he is only 38, like we say. Is he sort of the managerial equivalent of our youthful player purchase sort of thing?
Well, I mean, yes, absolutely. And I think if you look at his characteristics as a manager, what he's done and the style of football that Chris talked about, you're talking about a young Eddie Howe. I mean, in lots of ways, which again, you know, some of the criticism sort of around last season was that Newcastle need to be more, you know, need to be better in possession, need to be more progressive when they've got the ball. This guy is a hard pressing. He's a runner. That's the kind of thing. Again, very small side issue. Is he the guy that's going to unlock Nick Waltimada, for example? I mean, you know, who doesn't really do those things naturally. I mean, I'm just raising that as a point. I mean, I'm fascinated to see what he is. I'm always you know, my natural state of mind with these things is you always want to give a guy a chance. I'm excited to see what he can do as a coach, and so I've got nothing but you know, sort of positive thoughts. But it's you know, this is not that oven baked elite head coach who takes Newcastle from, you know, the nearly men into champions. This is not that appointment. This is about a fella who's been very successful, not in the major European leagues. Yeah, you know, won the title twice in Austria, won a cup, has won the title twice in Saudi Arabia. It's very different to doing it in the Premier League or in Spain or in Italy or Germany. It's not that level. And so Newcastle are putting their faith in this young man to kind of get a young team up and firing, which is, you know, it's fascinating in its own way. And I'm told that he's incredibly impressive, that he is full of ideas, and, you know, that as to that point that you asked Chris about being a yes man, I mean, I think his career already shows that he's nobody's fool, and he's spiky and he'll take people on. So I'm not sure that this is like an easy life appointment that Newcastle have made, because I think he challenges people. So have to see where they get with him. But yeah, fascinating.
Just to expand on the context I sort of gave before, this is, it's not the ideal time for Newcastle to be searching the managerial market. A lot of the I think at the minute there's 9 new managers now that Howe is leaving, who are going to be at Premier League sides going into the start of this new season, and that's not including caretakers who've become permanent or interim managers who've become permanent. So Newcastle have sort of missed part of that market. So they're operating within a reduced quantity of who is available, never mind the quality that's there, and it's also who is attainable, who could they get out of the situation that they're now in, given the timing of the year, given pre-season has started for most. So I think we have to take that in consideration. But then the flip side is you speak to people at Newcastle and there seems to be genuine enthusiasm about this as an appointment, that just as there is genuine enthusiasm and excitement about what they believe they are doing player-wise and sort of refreshing the squad and changing that moving forward. So we have to, I want to reflect that, because that is what is being said, and you can maybe turn around and say, well, they would say that, but equally they have a lot of belief in this. They think that this can work, they think it can be exciting, they think fans will be energized, and it'll be interesting to see how that translates on the pitch. A penny for the thoughts of someone like Harvey Barnes, who's just signed a new contract, and you do have to wonder what you presume he wasn't told during those conversations that Eddie Howe is about to leave. I mean, I think it was nearly being wrapped up long before the last couple of weeks when Howe was seemingly made this decision. But penny for the thoughts of him and others at the club who have sort of committed themselves to it. And then you look at other players like Dan Byrne or Jacob Murphy and some of the older members of the squad, and you do wonder, are they going to be as integral moving forward? Is it going to be a changing even more of the guard? And when you're coming in, when the summer window is already well underway and there's already so much upheaval at the same time, yeah, there are a lot of questions that this raises, as well as the intrigue and potential excitement of it.
It certainly does have the end of an era feel to it, doesn't it, George? And the start of a new one as well. Newcastle United's going to look very, very different going forwards. And you wonder how that identity is going to be shaped by this new boss.
Yes, and it's a complete open book in that sense. We've not heard him speak. It's not even been announced yet, of course. So on all of that stuff, we'll have to wait and see. And yeah, there are so many little, you know, there are so many little kind of plot lines. You know, Chris mentioned this kind of a couple of the experienced players there, and Dan Byrne and Jacob Murphy. Newcastle don't have a lot of experience anymore. They don't have leadership. They don't have. They're talking about this openly. They've been talking about this openly all summer, like that was something that they needed to bring into the team. And so, and then, you know, in charge of that, you're putting, you know, I don't want to be patronizing at all. I don't mean this to be, but like a young guy who's not managed in this league before. And so it becomes a very different group. And yeah, I mean, they can't change everybody all at once. You know, that's why it was important that someone like Fabian Scher or whatever should be hanging around. They're going to need experienced players, but it becomes something very, very different.
It also, George, potentially impacts on the type of players that you can attract to the club as well, because obviously Eddie Howe made his name as a manager, worked in the Champions League, and is now quite a well-known individual. But, you know, is that going to have the same effect with the new guy in charge for potential recruitment?
Well, I would flip that around. I mean, you know, we've talked about the Newcastle losing out on players. I mean, if we're talking about someone like James Trafford at the moment, so in spite of some noises you might have held elsewhere, and this is something that Chris has said before, James Trafford has been Newcastle's number one choice for goalkeeper for like 3 years now. And that was the same coming into this summer. Now, at the end of it, Trafford is joining Leeds for a lot of money, £40 million. He's being paid more in wages by Leeds than Newcastle wanted to pay. And so this is now the market that Newcastle are operating in. I don't think that's about Eddie Howe. You know, I think in previous windows, Newcastle have got to a point where they thought they'd got that deal done, and of course it never happened. Or, you know, last summer Man City, did what they were able to do contractually because of that clause. But I don't think it's about Eddie Howe. I don't think it's been about Eddie Howe. I think it's a lot about finances and what Newcastle can offer, and they're reducing their wage bill at this point. And so this is, you know, I think there is a real different reality that we're all going to have to get our heads around a little bit. I think, perversely, that the new manager coming in helps us to do that, because we're not going to be judging Eddie Howe by his achievements 18 months ago or getting into the Champions League. We're not going to be like, okay, you got us to a cup final, you got us to a trophy, you got us into the Champions League, we've done all those things, and now that's not happening. Why? That's on you. I mean, in some ways it becomes easier, because it's like, here's a new guy, he's a young manager, and here's a young team, and we judge him by his own merits as opposed to what's happened before. But it feels like a very different reality for Newcastle now.
Right then, we're just about there, chaps. Thank you very much for your time. Obviously, there's so much to talk about and so much going on with the club at the minute. We haven't managed to get through anywhere near all of it. However, I will leave you with this little stat courtesy of Opta. When Eddie Howe took charge of Newcastle, they were 19th in the Premier League. Since his first game, only four teams have won more points in the Premier League than them, with 290. Wow, what a stat.
He's going to be a hard act to follow, and I, you know, shouldn't be embarrassed about saying that. Doesn't mean, you know, can't look forward to it when the dust settles. But yeah, I mean, It's been a traumatic couple of weeks. We have to be honest. And yeah, like I said at the start, you know, real feeling of eras coming to an end. But Newcastle will carry on. We have to say, you know, huge thank you to Howe and what he's done. And yeah, say thank you to him and hope he enjoys a break. He'll get a hero's welcome when he comes back to St James's in the future, I'm sure. Let's see what the new Newcastle looks like.
Yes, indeed. Podnathetyne.supportandcast.fm is where you can pick up a subscription if you want to listen ad-free to the show or get additional content via our Extra Tyne feed. You can also email a question to podnathetyne@gmail.com. And as always, the Q&A thread on our subscriber Discord server will be open for entries. I'm sure there's lots of questions that people have at the moment. We still have an account on Twitter/X @podnathetyne, but we're more active over on Blue Sky @podnathetyne.bsky.social, and we're now on Instagram @podnathetynepodcast and TikTok @podonthetyne. Lots of things to remember and say there.
Wow.
Right then, thank you very much for your time, chaps. Thank you, Chris, for breaking from your holiday bliss to join us. Hopefully the next time we drag you out of your break, it'll not be to do an emergency podcast on Bruno Guimaraes joining Arsenal. Fingers crossed.
No, fingers crossed. Hopefully it's on Yeitel doing something wonderful or Newcastle making some big, big signings. That would certainly be nice to give everyone a bit of a lift. But Ollie and I will be in La Manga, as I've said, and rather than speaking to Eddie Howe, hopefully Yeitel is in position by then and we will be speaking to him and others about what this new era of Newcastle United looks like.
And thank you, George Cork, and please try not to kill any more magpies this week if you can manage it.
Yeah, rest in peace, Monty Magpie. I'm sorry that I squashed you.
There we go. Thank you very much to everybody for listening. From everybody at Pod on the Tyne, take care. Have a good week if you can. Goodbye.
The level of excitement, the level of respect shown to me, the level of interest in the team and the players and the club. Yeah, it's a new experience for me. Something that I will relish, and I will, you know, really buy into that culture that is here with how everyone thinks of their football club, and I will treat the football club as if the club was my own family. Do the best for the team and for the supporters.
On the shot, Fabian Sherwin. Oh! That is some way to seal it. Fabian Sher from distance has beaten Gianluigi Donnarumma and put it into the top corner to give us one of those special St James's Park European nights. Here they go again, long snap into the corner on the right, back to Isak, has another. Oh!
Picking up to 45, Trippier with drift, in goes Burn! It's the boy from Blyth!
It's amazing what football can do, and I think it's one of the rare sports that has that ability to give people days that they'll always remember. And with such a long wait for a trophy, this will be a day that I'm sure everyone will never forget. We will never forget it. I certainly won't. There's different ways to win trophies. Today we won it in the best way. We played a brilliant opponent, who've been the best team in the Premier League all season by a long way. And for me, we were the better team.